isn't to judge those feelings, thoughts, and behaviors, but just to notice them and try to become a little bit more aware of them.
So if you are trying to start a mindfulness practice for your family, not just yourself, where should you start?
This is sometimes a tough thing to hear as parents, because we have so much on our plate, but sadly it does start with us. That I like to think that our breath is contagious. So the more we are breathing and trying to focus on putting some of these practices into our lives, the more our kids will be able to put them into their lives. I was at a training once, and the trainer talked about how a parent can't parent when they're hearing shark music. And I remember writing down a note and thinking about it. This was before I was a parent. I've thought about that shark music so many times during this pandemic, and that idea that you're hearing the Jaws music in the back of your mind, and you're feeling that over arousal of your nervous system, which, going back to the adrenaline and the surge capacity being depleted, I mean, those stress hormones, once again, are living in our body. So when we're feeling that shark music or feeling over aroused in our nervous system, chances are things are going to be trickling down and we might be noticing more stress in our whole family unit. The three most important things that I like to think about when starting a mindfulness practice are finding a time of the day that's already a calm and quiet time and inserting mindfulness in there. Number two, being really consistent. Repetition is the best way that kids learn. And then three is this idea of keeping it simple. Don't try to do too much. It can be as simple as one little activity. As I mentioned, you know, these are things that we can be practicing during activities we're already doing, from brushing our teeth to going for a walk to taking a bath or shower. You know, make it really doable for yourself and for your family so that it's attainable.
You mentioned breath being kind of a central part of all this. So there's obviously a lot of resources out there for adults kind of getting a hang on this, but how do you start teaching children about breath?
Teaching children about breath is my favorite thing, is my favorite thing about my job. But one of the most important caveats that I like to explain to parents is we always hear, take a deep breath, take a deep breath, take a deep breath. But thinking about it, it's a complicated concept to think about what a deep breath means. And then, you know, we say it when our children are amped up or frustrated or maybe needing to calm down, take a deep breath. But then, you know, I take a step back and wonder, do they know what that means? I find that sometimes this idea of taking a full breath, like, can make more sense to children, especially young ones. And then really taking the time to teach them what it means to take a breath in, to inhale, and what it means to take a breath out or exhale. I brought a couple of my favorite tools to share. Normally we would play with them, but I mean, these are things that a lot of us probably have lying around. Bubbles are a great way to teach out breath. But you can also have kids practice and then blowing out the bubble. I love also using windmills for practicing out breath. A great tool for practicing an in-breath. This is just a silk flower, and I like to put some lavender oil on it because then it has the added bonus of de-stressing or calming down our kids. And this is a great way to help them practice breathing in. A lot of times, I think in the classrooms, I hear a lot of smell the flower, blow out the birthday candle. So seeing a physical birthday candle can help. If you want to have a lot of fun and don't mind the noise, those birthday blowers are really fun, but you have to be okay with a lot of noise. And then one of my favorites, if you want to get a little bit fancier with visuals, is this little toy called the Hoberman Sphere. And it's fun in general. You can use it as a ball, but it goes up and down. So as you're teaching kids about breathing in and out, it's really nice to use the visual of what it looks like when you inhale and fill with air and exhale and empty the air as well. So just really, I mean, and every kid's different. There are so many fun ways of teaching these things. I should add that the heart and belly breath that I started with today, I love to use that as a bedtime breath and let kids lie down next to their parent, and each one can pick a stuffed animal and rock their baby to sleep on their belly. It's another really great way for kids to see that rise and fall of their breath and to understand a little bit more about what their breath is doing.
You and I talked a little bit about, you have a sort of simple breathing exercise you like to do with your children. Can we give that a try now?
Yes, it was so funny. Such a coincidence that I have a Facebook page for my therapy practice, and the memory today was the same breathing exercise that I was planning on sharing, which I thought was a funny coincidence. But it's called five finger breathing. And another, I thought there might be some teachers here too. And it's one of my favorites to share with people in schools as well, because it's such a great tool to easily use in the classroom. So all we have to do is hold up one of our hands, and then one finger on the other hand. And I'll first explain what we're going to do, but it's very simple. We're just going to breathe in and trace our finger up, breathe out, trace our finger down. So we'll go all the way across our hand, and then we'll go back. And so everyone can just do it on their own, and then we can see how we feel. Everybody, a few people are still working. Take your time. So once again, I would ask people their thoughts and feelings after doing it. But what I will say is, if you do tomorrow have your child try this, it might look more like this at first. You know, it might not be quite as contained, but with some practice, kids can learn how to do this. Now, the reason we're tracing, combining breath and that proprioceptive input of touch is extremely calming. And sometimes for kids, especially when they are a little bit amped up, and adults too, it can be hard to access our breath. Sometimes we need a bridge between being able to breathe, you know, being able to really do a calming breath. So I find that for kids and adults alike, that touch factor, no different than a hug, like how quickly a hug calms us. So in a way, it's like giving ourselves a hug while breathing. In the classroom for teachers, I've worked with, where we can get kids to a point that just holding the hand up is a really great reminder to take that five finger breathing. And Deb, I have some really great posters of the five finger breathing. So if you think people would be interested, I'm happy to share it with you so that maybe Meredith could include it in All Aboard.
So you mentioned that you think of mindfulness sort of as a lifestyle. So can you walk us through sort of some of the examples of like everyday ways you incorporate mindfulness?
Yeah, like I mentioned before, I think that, you know, one of the most important things we can do to make this feasible for our family is to insert mindfulness into our daily activities when you think it would be best for your family. And this idea that the activity we choose, we're really doing it with our full presence using our five senses. So that's kind of the overarching idea. A few of my favorite ways to do this that I found work well for a lot of families are having a mindful snack. This is also one that I think could be fun in the classroom, although I'm not sure with COVID how snacks are doing, you know, in terms of everyone having the same thing. But taking something like a raisin or a clementine, like a segment of a clementine, something that most kids will eat, And, you know, kids and parents would first close their eyes and just put it in their mouth and feel how it feels. And, well, actually, even before putting it in their mouth, smell it. So, you know, we're really using our five senses to experience and appreciate this little raisin or little segment of a clementine. Now, this can be also, this can be used as adults too. You know, if by any chance we're actually able to enjoy a cup of coffee in the morning without our kids doing whatever they're doing, we can try to have a mindful cup of coffee or a mindful sip of coffee, maybe one sip. I actually practiced this myself. It was my husband's birthday over the weekend and I surprised him. I'm from New York City too, like Amanda, and I surprised him with pizza all the way from Brooklyn. And when I ate my last slice, I closed my eyes and I tried to experience the full impact of the Brooklyn pizza, knowing I'm probably not going to get it for a while. Another favorite that works really well is mindful walking or mindful movement. To go back to this idea of stress hormones and adrenaline and cortisol living in our body when we're stressed, the quickest way to process those stress hormones is through movement. So when we're experiencing big emotions or when our kids are experiencing big emotions, or even just on a day when we feel off and not very present, one of the best things we can do is to move our body, get out for a walk. So being able to insert a little mindfulness in here with a mindful walk, where once again, we're experiencing the walk with our five senses. I remember when we were doing virtual school, my son was, hi, Ashley. You guys sent home one of those really great nature scavenger hunts. And that's a perfect example. It was kind of like a bingo sheet. I don't know if you guys have all seen those, but it became one of our favorite things in the springtime when we were first experiencing the stay-at-home order and quarantine to do those nature scavenger hunts, which is a great way to, you know, kind of teach this idea of mindfulness to kids in a very attainable way. The last one I wanted to mention that is really fun and I try to do with my kids is this idea of heartfulness or family gratitude. Talking about, you know, this is another great one before bed, but talking about, you know, one thing we're grateful for. I've always liked to talk about that and then just send kind thoughts and wishes to everyone in the world. And this idea of, you know, imparting that kindness everywhere is a really important part of mindfulness too.
A lot of us are in the stages of tantrums and meltdowns. So how does mindfulness factor into to those tough situations?
Well, before I answer that exact question, I think an important thing to know about mindfulness is that, you know, people imagine mindfulness, oh, it means I have to be calm. Calm can be one of the impacts of, you know, of a mindfulness practice, but really it's about accepting our entire emotional experience. And so I think that that point is an important point to think about when we're thinking about tantrums and meltdowns, because there's a lot of emotional experience and emotions in general, big emotions that go into tantrums as it relates to our kids and what they're experiencing, and as it relates to us as parents and what we're experiencing when they're having their meltdowns and tantrums. Mindfulness, the practice of mindfulness teaches us how to regulate our emotions and also teaches our kids how to regulate our emotions. But as I mentioned earlier, it really does start with us as the parents. And like many of us have probably learned with tantrums, being able to manage our own emotions during a tantrum is sometimes the most paramount way to, you know, make that tantrum go away. So being able to, as they say in mindfulness, ride the wave of the tantrum so that we can stay calm, it really, really does shorten the tantrum. And I've noticed with, you know, when I can stay calm and stay level-headed, when my son Leo's having a tantrum, it really does go away. And I find that he also is tantruming less. And in general, kids are tantruming less when parents can ride that wave. It's not always easy. And with mindfulness, you know, we're practicing a lot when we're calm. So as parents, you know, that's an important thing for us to remember too, to just keep our kids and keep ourselves practicing when we're calm. Because if the first time we practice our breath is when our child's having a huge meltdown, it's going to be difficult.
What's a calm down corner?
Calm down corner is an awesome self-regulation tool that is another way to help our kids learn mindfulness. This idea that you can have a space in your home that's designated to, you know, for calming down and for when we're having big feelings to kind of go somewhere and be cozy. I think the most important takeaways of a calm down corner is understanding, very similar to what I explained about breath and other mindfulness strategies for kids, is that this has to be something that is practiced with repetition and consistency and a place that's always available to a child so that they can get used to using it as a space to calm down. And I find sometimes the easiest way to start a calm down space is to use it together with your child. When I started a space for Leo, Leo loves anything with transportation. So we would say, you know, oh, your engine is a little, your engine's running too fast. And when we started to notice the engine going too fast, we would take a break and sit. But we would also go in there in totally calm times. And I think that's an important takeaway for a calm down corner is, once again, we won't be successful if we only try to use it when our children or ourselves are in a hyped up, over aroused state of our nervous system. So being able to use that when we're calm and, slowly teaching kids by modeling, when they might be a little bit more aroused, and sitting with them in the calm down space can really do a lot to model it. And the ultimate goal is that they will go there when they need to calm down. But that does take time and practice. And I like to explain to parents to not expect that immediately and to expect to have to work with them. And one of the questions I always get is like, what do I do when I have multiple kids? And I used to answer in a different way. And now that I have multiple kids, we all go there. Yep. All three of us sit in the little Pottery Barn chair, you know, those little Pottery Barn chairs with the names on them. That's Leo's calm down space. So that's how I've dealt with it.
Do you have anything in your calm down corner? Like, what do you include in that?
Yeah, so I brought some of that stuff too. It's been trial and error, and I will say that every child is different. Leo really loves, like most kids, looking at pictures of himself, and we have one of those board books that have pictures of the family. So I've found that while some book, like he loves to read, but if he's actually in that over aroused state, he doesn't want to read, but this he likes to look at and has the impact of calming him down. I also love this book, Calm Down Time. That's one of my favorites to have in our calm down space. Like I said, he loves transportation, so we have a car. You know, feel free to put one of your children's favorite things. If they love balls and you think when they're really upset they're gonna throw something, maybe leave that out. But fidgety type toys are really great. Stress balls that you can squeeze are great. I personally don't use that because Leo would throw it. So we keep that one out. My other favorite tool is a glitter jar. I made this by myself. I know that as parents, we are especially parents of toddlers, glitter is scary. But this is super glued shut and a great tool for practicing focus, and even just staring at the glitter can be really, really calming. That's what we have in ours now. Something, a lot of times like a stuffed animal, something soft, a blanket can be nice. But you know, tailor it to your children and what you feel like might motivate them. to sit there. And I keep a little box next to our seat so that everything's available if he wants to utilize it.
Do you recommend these for adults too? Do we need our own special place to kind of get our mindfulness back on track?
Oh yeah. And I'll be totally and brutally honest that I've used the bathroom, because that's, as parents, sometimes the only private space we can get, where I've gone in the bathroom and said, you know what, Leo, I need a quick break. Mommy's feeling frustrated, and gone in the bathroom, taken a few rounds of breath, and then come back. So, I mean, do I recommend the bathroom as a calm down space? I mean, I'd prefer it to be something a little bit more luxurious. I've also used his calm down space because most of the tools that I put there for him are valuable to me as well, if I take the time to use them.
I was listening to Brené Brown's podcast, Unlocking Us, recently, and she was talking a little bit about play being a form of mindfulness, which I thought was so interesting, because obviously play is such an integral part of life at Paddington.
Yeah.
So could you tell us a little bit about how does mindfulness incorporate play, or what the relationship could be?
Yeah. As adults, I mean, I should speak for myself, but personally, I find it really hard to just completely lose myself in something as an adult. And it's a practice. And, you know, as kids, we play so readily, but as adults, it becomes more of a mindfulness practice to really connect to ourself in that way and connect to our family in that way. I listened to the same podcast, you know, after you mentioned it. And first of all, I loved what she said, and I especially loved how she talked about using play as a family to, you know, sort of brainstorm these ideas of, you know, what can we do as a family, where, you know, what are the things we love doing the most, and doing those things as a family, you know, real uninhibited, where you can just lose yourself. The other piece of that I think is really important is this idea of having connected mindful play with our children. And this is not going to be all day long. So I'll first say that, because that's not attainable. But sometimes I would say the number one thing I prescribe when kids are having a difficult time are that parents start with just 10 minutes of phone-free connected play. And usually that looks like, you know, you're sitting and just doing whatever it is your child's doing. So, you know, a couple days ago, Leo was just zooming his cars. He likes to make our couch into a garage/highway. So he was zooming his cars and I was zooming the cars, but I was just participating in his play without my phone for 10 minutes. And it goes a long way. It goes a long way. And I've started to try to do it with my younger one too, just participating in whatever it is she's doing wholeheartedly for that 10 minutes. So I think that's the other side of that I think about with play.
And how do adults like incorporate more play into their lives? Like, how do you carve out that time?
It's hard.
What would be an example for a grown-up?
I don't think we should feel bad if we have to schedule it and be really intentional about it and start with little bits of it. And I, you know, when the pandemic initially started and I was making these self-care checklists, I was including things like that were things that I used to find really fun and would lose myself in that I haven't done in a long time. So I think number one, intentionality, not feeling bad if we have to schedule something because we're all busy, and maybe just making it 5 or 10 minutes, or, you know, setting up an art project for, if you like art, setting up an art project for your kids and being able to do some of your own while they're doing theirs, you know, going for a run, having a family dance party. I find for me, that's one of the few things I can do where if we like really have a family dance party and I just go all in, I can lose myself in that. But it takes some work, and some days are easier than others to detach in that way.
And unwinding at the end of the day can sometimes be a challenge. I feel like more of a challenge for me than necessarily my kids. But do you have any kind of mindfulness practice tied to like bedtime rituals or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned the gratitude practice. That's a really easy one that I do with my kids every night. Some other favorites that a lot of kids love are progressive muscle relaxation or these tense and let go activities. I would do one with you, but they're really easy to find. You can Google tense and let go. You'll find a ton on YouTube, and some of the resources that I'll give you have some of them as well. But it's this idea of slowly relaxing our entire body, one body part at a time, and so that at the end, your entire body is relaxed. And there's lots of kid-appropriate ones, and generally, I found that kids really love them. Now, Leo doesn't really sit still for them, so we've done more like a three-year-old version of a visualization. And sometimes they involve Lightning McQueen because Lightning McQueen is his favorite character, and race car breaths where we're breathing in and vrooming out. And maybe there's things that he's been doing that I'm not so fond of. So sometimes we'll tell made up stories where I try to kind of put in his favorite characters doing things and having similar struggles, but getting through them. And all of those things I think are really fun for nighttime. I think that those are them. Oh, I brought one other thing that's one of my favorite little tools that Leo happens to love and I use with a lot of kids. This idea of if any of us have practiced yoga, sometimes they might have a candle in the room, or you'll be doing tree pose and they'll say, you know, find one spot on the wall to focus. So this is that same idea. It's a single pointed focusing activity, but it's just a simple color changing tea light. Kids are so enamored with these lights and how they change colors. And it's so funny that Leo has said, like, I want to meditate, because, I explained to him that it was meditating. And I mean, we literally probably looked at it for maybe like 30 seconds, but he's focusing on it. And that's where practicing focus starts, is just looking at something for 30 seconds. And you can find these on Amazon, just like a little color changing tea light. So that's another really fun before bedtime routine.
Besides just pandemic stress, which obviously we've been talking a lot about, what do you find your practice mindfulness is useful for helping?
Short answer, everything. I think, you know, the first things that come to mind are the big feelings. So anxiety, even excitement. I like to explain to parents, especially with toddlers, we experience anxiety and excitement almost the same way in our body. And we can differentiate those feelings as parents, but our kids can't. So a lot of times excitement can look very similar. So for them, I think the mindfulness practice can help with excitement. A lot of positive impacts on concentration and focus, which, obviously has bearings on ADD and ADHD. Also a lot of studies showing help with executive functioning. But really overall, really just helping our overall well-being and coping.
Have you come across any studies that specifically show the benefits of mindfulness in children?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's, I think my favorite one is one that does go over that idea of executive functioning, where a big group of third graders had participated in, it was like a mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, but they had designed it specifically for the school. And there was a lot of evidence after that it had improved executive functioning. And for people that don't know what executive functioning is, it's being able to pay attention, organize information, a lot involving our memory, So these are things our kids are using to, you know, to function on a day-to-day basis. Another favorite study actually that was done on adults, but that I thought was really interesting, actually showed a group of adults had participated in a similar mindfulness-based cognitive behavioral therapy group, and they used MRI scan, and actually the amygdala in our brain is where our emotions are housed, and the MRI scans actually showed less reactivity in the amygdala in that MRI scan in the participants who had participated in the group. So it's really interesting to me to think about that brain connection and how, you know, how things can be changing on such a deep level.
You have a graphic that kind of walks us through some of the resources that you recommend. I don't know if we could pull that up. And then, yeah. You know that, Deb. Well, we're working on the technical part of it. Maybe you can just kind of verbally walk us through kind of some, what do you think are some resources that
I brought some of my favorites. I have, and keeping with a theme, I like things to be very easy because I know none of us want to read a 300-page book, but this book, Sitting Still Like a Frog, Mindfulness Exercises for Kids and Their Parents, is such an amazing book. It also, if any of us have a way to play a CD anymore, there is a disc that comes with it with actual mindfulness, you know, that you can play for your kids. Oh, here it is. Wonderful. So yeah, Sitting Still Like a Frog, it's a super easy read and it's so practical. It taught me a lot about how to incorporate mindfulness into my own life. And then some of my favorite books, Charlotte and the Quiet Place is a wonderful book about how we always have that quiet place inside and how Charlotte finds that quiet place. For kids who might be experiencing some of the bigger feelings, my favorite book is An's Anger. Really gives a visual to what anger looks like for kids, and kids can draw what their own anger looks like and use that as a way to talk more about their bigger feelings. For those of you who might have some older kids, I wouldn't recommend this for our toddlers, but for elementary age kids, I'm sorry, I'm adding this one in because I thought about it at the last minute. Our Fantastic Elastic Brain. I love this book. It's such an amazing way to start teaching kids to just separate the fact that, you know, we might act a certain way, but how our brain impacts that and how our thought processes impact that. What else did I put on here? Oh yeah. A little card deck. There are so many, but this one's one of my favorites. The Little Renegades Mindful Kids card deck. There's lots of yoga card decks and, you know, once again, anything you think your kids might engage with, but I really like this one. It's a sweet one. And, then there's a couple apps, Dreamy Kid app, if you're okay with a little bit of screen time. Sometimes kids engage even more in that because it's extra special to have some screen time. The Mindful Mamas app, which is part of the promo for taking part in this parent education tonight, and also Mind Yeti. I found one more book that I personally love that I just wanted to share that's called Breathe, Mama, Breathe. And it 5-minute mindfulness for busy moms. So for those of you moms looking for easy ways to insert mindfulness into your life, I didn't think about that before, but I saw it on my bookshelf and thought that maybe some of you would learn a few things from it too. I keep it out all the time just as a reminder to myself.
They're all great. I've been using the Mindful Mamas app for about a month and I really am enjoying it.
Yeah.
A huge amount of really nice guided sort of 10-minute meditations that are very specific to mothers with young children. So dads could definitely benefit from it too.
Yeah.
Well, we have a few more minutes, so I thought it might be nice for us to be able to open it up to questions from people. So if you wanted to unmute yourself and ask a question, or you want to send one through the chat, you can do that. But anyone have any questions?
Really quick, Michelle, are you okay if I put this mindfulness resource in All Aboard this week?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
And I'm happy, we could also send an updated one with the other ones too.
If you want to get that to us, we'll put it in Thursday in All Aboard.
Okay.
Anybody got any questions? Thoughts? You're so mindful, you're falling asleep. Well, I don't think I have anything more. Do you have anything more, Michelle?
I don't think so.
Oh, I have a question.
Sure.
Sorry. I guess my question would be, like, if you did sit in meditation with your child, like, is there like a rule of thumb, like how long would you, like a minute per 8 year or something? I don't know.
Yeah, I really think it depends on your child and their attention span, and also what you're using as a tool. For toddlers, I think it's really beneficial to use things like the light I showed or the glitter jar, so they have something that they can focus on. But if you think that your child could sit and close their eyes for even 1 minute, you could try it. And I would say the biggest thing to remember is not to feel like a failure if it doesn't work, and to then just go to a little bit less time. So maybe it's using a sand timer, and your meditation could literally just be watching the sand fall and maybe turning it around and then watching it fall the other way. Or it could be, you know, looking at the little light that I showed, looking at the glitter jar. And for those not familiar with the glitter jar, you shake up the glitter jar and then you watch the glitter as it settles. So the meditation aspect of it is that you're focusing all of your attention and thought onto the glitter and trying to bring your mind back to the glitter every time your mind wanders. So the same idea that you would normally use in a regular meditation practice as an adult. But for kids, I would suggest for most kids to start with something that they're actually focusing on. 1 minute and build from there. And definitely try to practice at a time of day where your kids are already pretty calm.
Thank you.
Yeah.
There's a couple of guided ones on the Mindful Mama app that are to do with your child. And they'll preference them that, like, if your child wanders off in the middle of it, it's not a problem. Don't worry about that.
Another way to try it is to, you know, if you have a child that likes to sit on your lap and cuddle a little bit, you can do breathing with them, because being able to once again have that physical touch and feel yourself breathing with someone else is so calming. So that can be a really nice way, if your child might be a little bit more wiggly, to be able to breathe with them. And as kids get a little bit older, one of my favorites is back-to-back breathing, where you sit back-to-back and try to feel your breath and the other person's breath. And that's another great way to meditate with your family or with your child.
Yeah. Oh, and then any recommendations for specific art-based mindfulness activities?
Art-based mindfulness.
Oh, I do. I got. I mean, I think most teachers have a lot. Nancy would be great at this.
Yeah, but,
The color therapy I think is really, really good to like take a box of 24 crayons and just say, and it's really nice if kids have a separate space, which actually they all do now. But anyway, then you just say, you give a scenario and you say, okay, take a breath. And then you say, your mom just got mad at you, and you didn't, and it wasn't your mess, it was your brother's mess, and your mom got all mad at you. What color are you feeling? And then anyway, so you go with that, with all different feelings, maybe like make six boxes, And then you circle the ones that are the happy feelings. And then you say, look at your clothes. And usually those happy colors are all their clothing. Mm. And you say, these are your colors.
I like that.
And it can go on and on, but anyway, just a little bit. Nancy, you want to add anything?
No. A great one with breath is to, if you have some big paper, like those big post-it notes or a roll of paper, you can do breathing where you actually use a marker and color while you're inhaling up and down while you're exhaling. So a really great way to visualize and teach breath. So kids that are more into art stuff, definitely get into that one. And I mean, like Grace said, there are so many ways of using art. So if you have a more artsy child, and just, I mean, they love making their own glitter jars and really picking the colors and understanding that this is a tool they're going to get to use. So maybe go outside in the backyard and work with them and let them make their own glitter jar. Generally, I find when kids are part of creating their own calming tools, there's a much higher probability that they'll use them. You know, I've had kids make mindfulness books where they, you know, illustrate and create their own book of mindfulness tools or tools that we might have been using together. There's so many fun things. Oh, one of my other favorite things to do, though, this is the last thing I'll mention, is using colored popsicle sticks and maybe putting four different feelings: happy, sad, angry, scared. So keeping it pretty simple and letting kids put the popsicle stick in a different cup when they're feeling a certain feeling. Getting them used to being able to build that awareness of their feelings, and mom and dad using it too. If you want to use it with your kids, like make it a family affair so that everyone is doing a little bit more feeling identification together. And learning more about their emotions. But of course, kids would be able to decorate their own. Hope that helps.
Michelle, I have one question for you. Nice to see you. Thank you for tonight. And I've been thinking a lot about kind of the language that we use every day and things that I say that I'm not even really realizing, you know, the effect or impact that it might have. Like even saying something as simple as, how are you today, you know, versus how are you feeling right now? You know, that emotions can change from kind of moment to moment, and it's not a set thing. So in thinking about language, is there anything you would specifically recommend to either implement or avoid?
That's such a great differentiation that you thought of. So bravo that you're trying to build your own mindfulness and self-awareness.
I'm trying.
The kids can really attach to this idea of what's the weather today. And I'm almost positive that I got this idea initially. So I'll quote that it came from sitting still like a frog. I did not make it up. But this idea of weather, and I mean, I just saw a meme the other day how, especially in Colorado, we wake up and it's winter, and then it's spring, and then it's summer, and then by the end of the day, it's fall. So we are definitely experiencing the range of weather. It's a good way for kids to understand that just like the weather is changing all the time, our feelings are changing all the time. And a fun way to extend this idea and understanding it is an activity where they can, draw the weather report. So this goes back to the art. This could be something for our little artists who like to draw, where they're drawing their weather report and connecting that back to how they feel. I've also done it with some kids where we use like a little plate, and then we do the different weathers around it, and we can spin or show, have an arrow point to, this is what we're feeling now. I find that visual really helps kids understand that their feelings are changing all day. Because sometimes, especially for kids, when they feel a really big feeling, it can be so scary because they don't know that it's going to, that they're going to feel happy later. They might feel like that feeling is going to last a lot longer. And so the idea that we can work with them to better understand the range of emotions we feel throughout the day, is helpful. You know, I think it's fine to say, how are you doing today? I wouldn't worry about it. But more just to always welcome talking about feelings. So whatever works with your kids, you know, if it's reading a book about feelings, if it's, I love Todd Parr's feeling flashcards, anything by Todd Parr, but I love his feeling flashcards. You know, it could be while watching a show, press pause. What was that character feeling? What did Elsa feel? What did McQueen feel when he got in that accident? You know, giving kids time and room to talk about their feelings would be what I say is the most important thing.
Well, Amanda, Michelle, we can't thank you enough. This was really great. I know I wrote a few notes, and tonight I can't wait to practice something to fall asleep. So thank you. And be sure tomorrow to look at your email. You're going to get something from Sugar Wish, and don't delete it. Be sure to open it, okay? And just as a little teaser, the next Parent Association presentation like this will be November 16th, and we're going to go a half hour earlier because it's going to be darker, and so we're going to try 7:30, so hopefully kids will be in bed, and Rebecca, and I think Amanda, again, you're going to do a presentation, and Rebecca's going to help with sleep and getting sleep, kids. And so I know I look forward to that, to pick up a few tips for how to get sleep as an adult. So we can't thank you enough for tonight. Again, Michelle and Amanda, all of you for tuning in. We really appreciate it. And we'll look forward to a month from now where we can also learn from Rebecca. So if you have other ideas that you want the PPA parent education to explore, just shoot me an email and we'll bring it to the group. So good night, everybody. I hope you have a good night's sleep. And thanks again.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.